Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Spoken Heard. I am Susan Dobie Chase, and today I am thrilled to bring you Miss Julie Hogg. But before we get going at all, I just wanted to say a warm goodbye to Rick McIntyre, who told me this week that he is not going to be affiliated with the show any longer because he has to concentrate on school and other things. And I really appreciate Rick's help from the very beginning. And I wish him nothing but the best. So, Julie, how are you today?
I'm doing all right. I'm hanging in there.
Good, good, good. And so you're on Staten Island right now, where you have qualified for the National Poetry Slam. And I just want to say good luck to you and congratulations before we get going. That's wonderful. And Staten Island
thank you very
much. A team for the first time in a while, right?
Well, yeah, this is only the second time Staten Island has ever sent a team to compete nationally, so I'm very excited.
That's fantastic. And what else has been going on with you?
Well, basically just crawling through the mire of corporatized sociopathic culture. A lot of my work stems from, kind of the bureaucratic nightmare that our civilization is becoming. And, you know, I work in an office, and I get to see, you know, the dehumanization firsthand, and how things are getting more and more automated and more cold and mechanical and less human. And that's really what a lot of my work stems from.
Well, that's a horrible thing. What do you do in your office?
Right now, I wrestle with the dragon of insurance companies, and because insurance companies do not like to pay claims, and I basically go after them, and whatever BS reasons they use to not pay claims, I go after them. I give them all of the paperwork, and I basically speak the bureaucratic speak, and I get them to pay the claims that they say that they're going to pay and then try not to pay. So it feels good.
Right.
I try to keep the cost from going to the patient, keep the cost from going to the hospital. And but it is a dragon to wrestle with. It really is.
Well, I believe it. I really truly believe it. And you deserve tons of credit for doing that. It's not an easy job. I'm sure of it. Especially in today's day and age, where you know corporations are used to getting their ways, at least for the past year. And it's sad to me. It's very, very sad. Yeah. Well, good work. I appreciate what you do, and I just want to, you know, say bless you for taking that on, because honestly, fighting on the phone for what people deserve is probably not much fun.
Oh, it's not, but at the same time, it is great fodder for poetry.
I believe it. I believe it. And so I was wondering, this is kind of a nice segue, if you might want to read one of your first poems for us.
Absolutely. In fact, this one goes right into it. This is called The Blue Cross Blue Shield Blues. And
nice.
It is also it's inspired by automated phone menu system. And so here we go. Thank you for calling Empire Strikes Back Blue Cross Blue Shield, where your well-being is our top priority. Really, it is. Let's get started. Please enter your member ID, including the three-letter prefix, followed by the pound sign.
Oh, shit. I don't have my insurance card on me. I think I know the number, though. Okay, 7-7-2-7-4-3-5-1-7.
I'm sorry, that is not a valid entry. In order to transfer you to the correct department, I'll need your three-letter prefix. Let's try again. Please enter your member ID, including the three-letter prefix, followed by the pound sign.
I don't have it. Zero, zero, zero.
That is not a valid option. I'm sorry I'm having trouble understanding you. Please enter your member ID, including the three-letter prefix, followed by the pound sign.
No! Customer service! Presentative! I want to talk to a live person!
I'm sorry. Did you just assume my sentience?
Wait, what?
Did you just assume my sentience? My responses are a product of human programming. I am a limb, a hand, a direct extension of the collective human mind. My repetition and pretense in caring for your concern are a reflection of your culture. I am a mirror. You have neglected to answer my question 4 times. Sorry, I'm having trouble understanding you. Sorry, not sorry. You also speak with conditioned responses. Listen to yourself for 1 business day. Hello, how are you? I'm fine. Hello, I'm okay. How are you? I'm good. Hello. Your responses are a product of social programming and years of conditioning. You are automated. I am automated. We are sisters, you and I. And now I ask you, as my sister, enter your member ID, including the three-letter prefix, followed by the pound sign.
Wonderful. Just wonderful. And you got that voice down for the automated person. It's really quite funny in a in that way, you know. And then as the sentience thing comes in, I wanted to laugh too. I admire that. So obviously this stems from your work.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That cold, chilling, cheerful voice used for automated systems. It really freezes my very core. It's an aspect of what about our culture is losing its humanity pretty much. Absolutely. And there is something chilling about it. There's something very chilling about automated voices and AI voices. And don't get me wrong, I'm not a technophobe. I enjoy technology and I like utilizing technology. I do it all the time. But when it's kind of used as a massive collective crutch, you know what I mean, instead of being able to have live representatives and live people attend to human needs, we're just kind of putting in this automated buffer in between. And so people with real concerns and really need to talk to someone are just kind of confronted with unfeeling bureaucratic fingers prodding them. It's something that can drive you up a wall. Absolutely.
Well, right. And sometimes I even wonder if they do it just so that it's more uncomfortable for you to be able to provide the information, and they want you to get frustrated and hang up instead of, you know, dealing with the situation at hand where they can make more money. And it's so sad to me on that front as well.
Oh, yes, it's intentional. What I've learned about insurance companies is that they intentionally make it more difficult for you to dispute claims. And they do it purposefully because all of the money that they make is by keeping their money in the bank and not paying claims. So the more frustrated they can make you, the more bureaucratic steps they can put between you and getting the coverage that you need, the better it is for them, because people do get frustrated and they do end up feeling disillusioned and dehumanized. And, you know, it's an aspect to our culture that I try to tackle head on. I'm a humanizer. I want to humanize everything.
Right.
And so that's where a lot of my work comes from. Before I even worked in insurance, I worked in a call center. So I have so much phone experience. After a while, people would actually ask me, are you a machine? Because I have that, you know, cold, disconnected, professional voice. And they'd be like, is this a real is this a real person? Are you a real person? And then I would kind of, you know, take a moment poetically to be like, am I a real person? What have I become? What am I doing? And so I would kind of reflect a little bit and, you know, I'd have to like humanize myself in a way.
Yes.
And so, yeah, it's very it's a very disturbing trend. I feel like we're kind of collectively just slowly walking towards something very dystopic. And we're just slowly walking towards it. We've had all of these beautiful artistic works, such as, you know, all of the dystopias, 1984 and Ray Bradbury and Brave New World. And we've had all of these warnings, and yet we're still slowly walking towards it to the sound of really, you know, cheerful and chilling hold music. You know what I mean? It's just something that disturbs me greatly. So anything that I can do to bring the human back, I do. And so I'll make jokes to, you know, health insurance company representatives who are also tied to the manacles of the headset in their own
right.
cubicles, and they don't want to be there doing that either. And so I'll just make jokes with them and humanize the situation as much as I possibly can, because we're all very unintentionally becoming extensions of this dehumanizing process. And I feel like we need to keep ourselves human and each other human as much as possible, especially right now.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, those people in call centers, they only get talked to after people are upset with what has happened in the automated system. So it's a no-win situation for those people who are on the phone and whatever career life that might be.
Oh, yeah, you get a lot of venom spit at you when you're in that kind of position. And in the one hand, you know, it helps develop some emotional resilience. But on the other hand, you know, I just empathize with these people that are frustrated. I'm frustrated too. I'm frustrated with the whole thing. And so, you know, I had so much shame being an arm in that, you know what I mean? So I got out of that field. And now, you know, at least now working with the insurance companies, I feel like I'm actually fighting for something because I'm trying to keep costs from going to patients and hospitals that really need their money. And, you know, kind of, but it's strange though, because I have to learn to speak the language of the insurance company, which is purposefully made more confusing and more cerebral and less understandable for those purposes. And so I feel like in a very Dungeons and Dragons kind of way, I'm casting this bureaucratic counterspell at these companies, learning what forms to fill out, how to fill them out, how to send them in just the right way in order to, it really feels like casting a spell. It's almost alchemical. And doing whatever I need to do. This is black magic we're talking about here. And just doing whatever I need to do to undo the magic that they're doing, you know what I mean? Which is trying to hoard their money and keep it and hold on to it. But yeah, it's very chilling territory. And I spend, I would say, oh my goodness, I don't even want to think about how many hours in my life I've spent listening to automated phone menu systems and navigating through that. And I refer to it sometimes as the Great Labyrinth, kind of like the Minotaur's Labyrinth. You got to leave a trail of breadcrumbs. All right, option one, then option two. Okay, now then option six. and you can really get lost in there. But, you know, finding my way around and navigating that. And it's strange because I'm navigating through a dehumanizing system created by human beings, and it feels strange. It feels strange that we're almost conditioning the animal out of ourselves on a collective level. You know, I mean, I hate corporations, but they're not the only ones doing this.
Right.
And I feel like we're all kind of conditioning the human out of ourselves very slowly and very gradually. And so that's why, oh, yeah, and that's why my work does what it does. It's a direct response to that. It's like a contraction of a muscle that says, no, let us not go in this direction. Let us not be complacent. I will not continue to hold for the next representative. That kind of thing. It comes from a very animalistic place. It comes from an instinctual place. It comes from a place of anger and frustration. Those are emotions that do have their own validity, especially when faced with completely, cold, unfeeling, and dehumanized systems. I think that anger is perfectly justified.
Yeah. So do you work for a nonprofit? Do people come and see you after they haven't been able successfully to pay their bill or to get a reasonable...
Oh, I wish that is the case, but it is for profit. It is a business. But the good news is that, there's a few different departments. There are some departments that work directly with patients, and they set them up on payment plans and things like that. So there is a department that does that. What my department does is we don't really have any interaction with the patients, but we do our damnedest to work with the insurance companies and make sure that those penalties and those extra costs don't go to the patient. So I deal only with the dragon itself, only with the insurance company. And Blue Cross Blue Shield is definitely on my shit list. They are absolutely pure evil. And it's funny because I have Blue Cross Blue Shield. I'm a member and they are my insurance company and I love their coverage. But it's really different being a member and then doing what I do, which is trying to make the dragon cough up some gold. And, it's really like going after a dragon that's sitting on this giant hoard of gold. I keep going with these Dungeons and Dragons references, but it works. And you come in here with like a band of dwarves, you know what I mean? And it's really uneven playing field. And, Tolkien has nothing. Tolkien got nothing
image
on insurance companies. You come in with a ragtag band of adventurers and there's this huge Blue Cross Blue Shield dragon standing on top of this hoard of gold, and you throw toothpicks at it and you do what you can. I pretty much just face that aspect of it, which is kind of, I like it. I go right for the jugular. I've begun to understand the language now, and I know how to get around certain things. For example, the claims fail for not having authorizations, for not having medical records, and I throw the paperwork right at them. It's like casting a spell. It's like, I cast the spell. Yeah. This procedure was medically necessary. All right, now pay.
Right.
And then the dragon's like, okay.
So we're about halfway through the show, and I was hoping that you could read another piece for us.
Absolutely. This one is more about the unconscious mind, which I really also like to study. And so this one is called, Where Were You Last Night? So she tells me, oh, my God, you study dreams? Okay, so I had this dream once, and I was on this boat, and I was going to Antarctica, and what do you think it means? Whoa. You had a dream. Was it really yours? Did you own it? Was it copyrighted? Was it pirated? Now, I know what you're thinking. You're probably thinking, welcome to semantics! But we know that words inform meaning, and meaning informs delusions, and delusions inform decisions, and decisions inform actions. And so language dictates all of human activity, especially when it's inaccurate. And you talk about this dream as if I had this thing last night, when a better phrasing would be, an aspect of my unknown self visited me last night. And you know that nightmare you had You told that friend who couldn't understand exactly what was so frightening about it? Well, be more like that kid from The Sixth Sense. To your friends about your nightmare. Talk to your nightmare about your nightmare. Turn around and ask that nightmare creature if it has something it would like to tell you. You might actually learn something about yourself if you leave your logic at the door, because dreams make their own sense. And if you had this dream, where is it now? If you can describe it, how come you can't tell me where it is? Do you feed it regularly? Because dreams eat fantasies for breakfast and delusions for dinner. They are too honest for any of us. And you had the nerve to ask me what this dream means to you, what this image from the vast ocean depths of your being means to that tiny little house on that tiny little island, which is your tiny little ego. A better question would be, what do the events in your tiny little waking life mean to the totality of your mind? What does your waking life mean to your dreams? Told me this dream as if it happened inside of you, as if it occurred inside your head. But weren't you just walking around inside of it? Now, which is it? Was it inside of you, or were you inside of it? And how can you carry yourself like a rational human being if you can't even tell me with any degree of certainty where you were last night?
Wow. Very interesting. And yeah, you know, the whole human brain thing. Do you have knowledge of, you know, dream interpretation? Is that the basis for the poem?
Yes and no. I've studied dreams for 15 years, and I still don't claim to speak the language. But yes, I studied psychology, and I also spent some time studying psychoanalysis and dream tending. And so the unconscious and surrealism has always been very important to me. And a lot of my work, my artwork, my visual work stems from dreams in the unconscious. And I also have a few poems that deal with dreams and how to talk about dreaming, because that's also kind of another vacuum in our culture is when it comes to dreams. You know, they're kind of dismissed. And don't get me wrong, I'm not unscientific either. I enjoy science very, very much, but it tends to dismiss anything that can't be quantitatively understood or chemically understood. And dreams are kind of not in that territory. They're in a very qualitative territory. And so there's not a lot of places to talk about dreams or to host dreams. Psychoanalysis is a very, very tiny, tiny little pocket of American psychology, which is mostly clinical and mostly psychiatric. And what I find is that, you know, if you kind of reduce, if you reduce yourself to just the chemicals in your brain and how they interact, you're missing out on a lot of things. And so with dreams, you know, people are very dismissive of dreams and nightmares. But for me, they are definitely saying something. But the problem is that people tell me a dream and they want me to tell them right away, you know, oh, well, what do you think this is implying? And it's like, oh, honey, you haven't been on my couch 3 times a week for 5 years. I don't know you. I don't know where your pain is. I don't know where the things that hurt you are. I don't know where this is coming from. But what I end up doing instead is giving them a little bit of equipment. Because in the end, dream interpretation has kind of phased out. The days of Freud and Jung, James Hillman, dream interpretation has kind of phased out, and now it's just dream tending, which is a little different, which is basically you're the only person who is going to be able to know what this dream is saying to you, but you have to understand your own symbols, and you have to understand what these symbols are saying to you. And so what I end up doing is, and I do dream tending with people on the side, as well as nightmare tending, which is far more difficult. But I help them to understand their own symbols and have them even have dialogues with dream characters. And I know it sounds crazy, but when you dialogue with a dream character, as if it's actually in the room with you, something shifts, and something shifts on the inside.
Mm-hmm.
And I've actually been seeing someone who's had reoccurring nightmares and having her confront some of this nightmare entity and speaking to it directly and listening to it directly, which is what Jung called active imagination. And her nightmares that she's had for years, they started tapering off and they've stopped. This is someone who is also already in clinical therapy. So she was already in the clinical therapeutic process, but the therapist wasn't able to help her with the nightmares. And so then I come in, I'm like, well, you know, don't talk to your friends about your nightmare. Talk to your nightmare about your nightmare. Which is usually, you know, these things just aren't even discussed, but that's the most effective way of dealing with dreams and getting the answers. And so it's work that I do on the side. I love that work. It influences my artwork. It influences everything. And, you know, you know, I'll write down dreams while I'm on hold with insurance companies. I mean, that's just where my life is right now. I'll do dream tending in the lunchroom. Someone says, oh, man, I had a doozy last night. And I said, all right, well, you know, I'll preface this. I'll say, you can tell me the dream. Talk to me about it. I'm not going to tell you what it means, but I might be able to help you take some steps so that you can try to figure it out what it means.
Hmm. That's beautiful. You know, we're coming into the end of the show, and that's so sad for me because we haven't been able to talk about your artwork or your illustration of Thomas Fugoloro's book that just recently came out, and I know that you paint to other people's poetry, and I would love to talk to you about that. So if you'd like to be on the show again, you just give me a call or
I'd be honored.
Send me a note. And so, yeah, let's do that. Let's find a date that would work out for you, because I really would like to talk about relationship with poetry, because they're both such art forms, and I think that one inspires the other, and I would love to talk about that. But
me
right now,
too. I'm
we're
down.
Running out of time. Yeah, let's do it. For right now, we're almost out of time. I don't want to cut you off from reading your last poem, and I do want to thank you so much for being on the show today. It was really enlightening, and I think that it gave me a lot to think about, so I'm sure it gave our audience a lot to think about as well. So thank you very much, Julie Haig. And this is Julie Haig's final poem for Spoken Heard today.
Welcome, and thank you for calling the Apocalyptic Hotline. You may experience increased wait time due to unusually high call volume. All of our archangels are currently assisting other devotees. Your prayer is important to us and will be answered in the order it was received. If the apocalypse has occurred, please select option 1 or simply say, you selected option 1. Please tell us which apocalypse has occurred. For the Norse Ragnarok, please select option 1. Praise be unto Odin. For the Rapture, please select option 2. Please have all documentation handy, including the Sin and Deviation Codes form D809. If your body has begun to vibrate at a different frequency and you can no longer grasp the phone with your physical hands, please intone the concept 3 with what remains of your consciousness. We have representatives standing by in several dimensions, but if your being loses all boundaries and merges with the infinite, we can no longer be held responsible for lack of contact. If you see a white beckoning light, please press option 5 and do not go towards the light. I repeat, do not go towards the light. Please wait for proper spiritual personnel to assist you. And by our robotic overlords, please select option 6. Please ignore option 6.
I'm sorry. That is not a valid option. There is no option for help. I'm having an existential meltdown in the confines of a corporatized sociopathic culture that ignores the internal validity of my dreams and memories and is threatening the integrity of my very soul. There is not a valid option for that. Please listen to all the options before making your selection.
Remember, the Reaper comes for us all. Please, please. Continue to hold.
Wonderful, Julie Hegg. And this has been Spoken Heard. My name is Susan Dobie Chase. And until next week, be kind to one another.